Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Hey, you know it's Taz and Moose. You
know it's Taz and Moose. Hey. Coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios, National Mortgage Lender. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. 855-212-4227, always your number to call. Hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at Taz and the Moose. So we kick off the third and final hour here on this Monday morning and do it in style as we hit the guest line. Let's welcome aboard right now Purdue Boilermakers head football coach Jeff Brohm. Hey, Coach, Taz and the Moose with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning, and congrats on a hell of a victory on Saturday against Ohio State.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you guys having me. Now, it was a great moment for our team. We definitely enjoyed it, and it was just really a special night for us.
Hey, Coach, so, yeah, I mean, listen, I've had a chance this year to watch you guys play a bunch, and very impressive squad. Impressive how, and I'd love to know how you, you know, we'd love to know how you turned this thing around, because you started off this year, you know, with a few losses, and then you guys turned it around and have been doing really, really well, and some serious Big Ten victories and stuff like that. And, you know, I got to say, what do you attribute this to? Is it your coaching staff? Is it just your kids, that are your players, just turned it around and facing adversity and kicking it in the face? You know, talk about how it started off rough and how where you're sitting now.
Well, it is kind of amazing to think that you lose three games in a row. You lose at home to Eastern Michigan, and then just a few games later, you beat Ohio State at home. So it's been a crazy beginning of the season. But you know what? I tell you what, we knew we were not going to have the experience maybe early on that we had. And to be quite honest with you, I think as coaches, myself mainly, we were very conservative. We tried to just kind of get our guys lined up in the right position, not do too much, not ask them to do too much, not take too many chances. And, you know, we realized for us at Purdue, that's not going to work. We started off 0-3. We had some tough losses. Really, it wasn't until we played Missouri, you know, the third game, I kind of just said on offense, like, we're gonna take some chances and be much more creative and throw the ball vertically and do what I like to do and not worry about mistakes. And we had a great game on offense. Unfortunately, we didn't play well on defense. And really, it wasn't until the next week where with Coach Holt, and we kind of had the same philosophy on defense, and we just said, you know what, we're not going to just sit back and play vanilla. We're going to take a lot of chances. We're going to blitz from all over. We're going to bring people. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to go down swinging. Was the new mindset. We're going to step up to the plate, and when we strike out, we're going to have three swings. And ever since we've done that, in my opinion, we put our players in a better position to win. They've felt more comfortable taking chances and being aggressive. If they make a mistake, they know we're going to do it again. And our guys really have just played hard. We had a lot of silly mistakes early on, too, that we had to get cleaned up, and that's on me as well. We weren't policing enough in practice. We allowed some things to happen during games that shouldn't. And to this point, we've done a better job of cleaning those things up and not beating ourselves. So I think just the combination of all those things and the fact that we really approach every season as a one-game season, every game, doesn't matter what our record is, because really, if you win or lose, you still got to go win the next game. So our guys have kind of bought in to say, you know what, let's just learn from our mistakes, find a way to get better, and see where we go from there.
You know, Coach, when you were getting your team prepared to take on Ohio State on Saturday night, when did you, you know, certainly a different mindset looking at it, team playing, when did you feel that you had to, or felt good that your team had a chance to pull off what many people thought was never going to happen, pull off the upset?
Well, I don't know if I ever felt great about it, but to answer your question, the night before when I talked to our team, I said, you know what, guys, last year we did some decent things, but I don't think we were ready for this game at any point. This year to this point, I don't think we've been ready, but I said, you guys are ready now. You've handled a lot of hard losses. You found a way to improve and get better. We've done a lot of things better. And I know you guys can beat this team if you put your mind to it and you play as hard as you can for 60 minutes. And while I ain't going to lie, probably some of it was coach speak, our guys believed. And we went out and we played aggressive the entire game. Even when we had a slight lead, we were still aggressive. And I think because of that approach, our guys just really gained a lot of confidence. There were some inspirational things going on, too, with our team. But you know what? It was just a great game for our home fans and for the Purdue faithful, and really just a huge victory for our program.
And, you know, Coach, in that big victory where you guys, I mean, you wouldn't say it, I will, you guys slapped around the Buckeyes, let's be frank, at home. And in that fourth quarter, you guys put up 28 points just in the fourth quarter. You won the game 49-20. But I got to tell you, you got this 50th senior running back, DJ Knox, his kid number one. Talk about him a little bit. I love watching him run. He had almost about 130 yards this past Saturday night against the Buckeyes. He's a fun player to watch. And he looks like he's strong as hell in the weight room, too. I got to tell you, he's a thick kid. Talk about him a little bit.
Well, he's a great young man. He's one of our team captains. And the thing he does that is impressive, he just goes hard all the time. And we kind of tease him. You may not be as fast as you think, but because his legs are turning, he's not real tall, it looks like he's going a lot faster than he is. But the great thing about him is every day in practice, every time in the game, he has no fear. He does whatever we ask. We ask him to block, he blocks. If you ask him to catch the ball, he'll do his very best. If you ask him to run it, he's going to run it as hard as he can. And he just played extremely well. He's a guy that's overcome some injuries and some things in his personal life. So for him to have that type of game against the Ohio State Buckeyes was a tribute to him, but just a great leader for our football team.
How about, Rondell Moore was fantastic. 12 catches, 170 yards, and two touchdowns. Certainly, he was special and provided the big-time plays.
Well, he's extremely special, and for a true freshman to play the way he has is really remarkable, in my opinion. We knew he would be an outstanding player, but I think he's even surpassed that to this point. Just a very strong man. I mean, for a guy that isn't real tall, this guy is put together. He plays extremely hard. He is extremely humble. It's not about him. He doesn't like to be interviewed. He just wants to play football. He gives us everything he has. He has good receiving skills. Basically, we went into the game knowing they were going to put a nickel right over top of the entire game and still played an umbrella defense behind them. And we said, you know what, we're still going to go to you. We're still going to throw you the ball a lot, and we're going to still allow you a chance to get open. And we're not using him. We're going to use you as a decoy. And it just having his presence on the field actually opens up a few other things for other guys. And I think because he plays so hard, he's so quick, it's hard to get your hands on him. We're always going to give him a chance to have plenty of touches during the game.
You know, Coach, you know, we've talked a lot of a couple of the offensive players, but the defense, you know, that it's not an easy offense to go up against. We know how brilliant Haskins has been at quarterback for Urban Meyer. You know, to hold that team down to 20 points was an impressive defensive performance on Saturday night.
Well, we've come a long way on defense, and like I said before, I think the first three games we were trying to get some pressure with a three and a four-man rush, and we weren't even getting past the line of scrimmage, it seemed like. So we said, you know what, we're going to blitz linebackers, blitz safeties, blitz corners. We're going to start to rush more guys. And ever since we have, we've really created a lot more pressure on the quarterback. We've made him feel uncomfortable. It's helped our secondary out quite a bit because we haven't had to cover us as long. Our guys have gained confidence, and we wanted to get that quarterback on his heels. He's an outstanding quarterback. He's put up tremendous numbers. He's very good. But any quarterback, doesn't matter how good you are, if you got guys in your face, if you got guys making you feel uncomfortable, making you escape the pocket when you don't want to, it's going to help the cause. And I think they did a good job. We found a way inside the 10-yard line to keep them out of the end zone.
Yeah,
he actually even missed a field goal, and that was huge because that really turned the tide and gave us a chance to kind of get a little bit of a lead and then build from there.
Hey, Coach. So now, as you know now, right? Because you're the head coach of 18, 19, 20 year olds, and it's tough to keep them focused. Now they're coming off this gigantic win, beating number 2 Ohio State. Now you got to go to another huge Big Ten matchup, tough matchup into Lansing and play the Spartans of Michigan State. How do you keep your squad now focused? I'm sure you've already moved on as a unit in practice or film or whatever you did, doing today, I should say, moved on from Ohio State, right? I mean, how do you keep these kids locked in now to Michigan State?
Well, to be quite honest, we do want to enjoy this victory, and I kind of gave them even Monday to enjoy it as well. That's when they're off of practice.
All right.
I said, hey, we come back Tuesday, we got to move on. But this was a special game, and I do want them to enjoy it because they put a lot of work in it. Now, at the same time, I think our guys understand these two things. One, about four games ago, we lost at home to Eastern Michigan. So, trust me, on any given day, our team could not win. So we understand that. And then I think if you look last year, you saw Iowa really beat Ohio State handily. And then really 2 weeks later, They faced a little old team called Purdue. They came in there to their home field, and we found a way to beat them. So it just goes to show you, in college football, other than a few elite teams in the country, on any given day, anything can happen. I think our players understand that we can get beat at any point, and going in to play Michigan State is going to be a tough challenge for us.
You know, Coach, for yourself, coming over from Western Kentucky, where you had a lot of success, great offense, to Purdue, what has been the, for you, the biggest learning, stepping in from that conference into the Big Ten and what Big Ten football is all about? How about yourself as a head coach?
Well, to be honest with you, one of the reasons I took the job really was for the challenge. And I thought, you know what, a lot of people may not want to take this on. I kind of want to. I mean, I think I can maybe try to go here and be a difference maker and try to do my part and understand that we've got a lot of work to do. And if it can happen, if we can get it done, it's going to feel that much more rewarding.
For sure.
I do feel like that we've made some strides and some progress. I feel like our guys work extremely hard. I think we're taking all the small steps necessary. This is a great conference. On any given day, anybody can win or lose, and that's what makes it great, and that's what makes this college football game so great. But we try to attack it one game at a time, and this new strategy we've kind of put together is like we're going to swing, and we're going to swing for the fence, and if we lose, we lose, but we're not going to go down looking at strikes when we stand up there, and I think our team has kind of bought into that, and hopefully we can just continue to keep swinging.
Coach, I had a chance several weeks back. I TiVo'd it. The name escapes me. Something on Big Ten Network with they focused on your squad, on your team, and let the cameras in behind the curtain. How was that? I mean, kind of like, you see a lot of college programs do that. But, you kind of want to keep things under the vest, right? And we got to learn as a public, as a college football fan, about your program. I mean, is that something you would consider down the road doing again?
Well, I think for us it's important to do that. We're a program that needs to get out there. We need to let, people across the country and fans and really recruits kind of see what we're all about. The great
thing for branding, right? For branding purposes.
Without question. You know, great thing here is I think if anyone has an opportunity to come here, we've got brand new facilities opened in August of last year that are really as good as it gets. You know, we have great fan support. We've been filling out the stadium. Our campus is outstanding. Our education is top of the line. Yep. And this is a great, great town of hungry people that want to do something special that hasn't happened in a while. So the great thing is if you come here, I think you can get a chance to play early and be a difference maker. And when you do, people are going to know your name because it hasn't happened around here as much as some of the other places. I think that's what makes this game so special.
We're talking to Coach Shep Brohm, head football coach at Purdue, following their upset victory of Ohio State over the course of the weekend. And Coach, we'd be remiss if we did not mention what is just a remarkable story of Tyler Trent, a sophomore at Purdue. Battling bone cancer, it's terminal in hospice care. But the connection that your team has with Tyler Trent, and he had an opportunity to be there on Saturday night to witness this. Talk a little bit about that story and that connection your team has with Tyler.
Well, I think it's been huge for everybody. It's been an inspiration for us here for a while, and I think now that the whole country has seen it's definitely become that as well. But really just a special young man. This is a guy that's gone through a ton. A lot of people his age don't have to do that. And the great thing about him is this guy has had unbelievable strength, great courage. He's had a tremendous attitude. He's got a smile on his face every time you see him. I went to his house a couple weeks ago. I saw him at the game. And you wouldn't think that he's in the situation he is because of his bright smile. But, just a great example of what you can do if you're strong, if you put your mind to it. This guy bleeds gold and black. He's been an inspiration for our team. I really now think he's an inspiration for the entire country. This guy, really is just a special young man. His family is too. So really to give him a win when he predicted it, which it was a bold prediction, we're very proud and happy for that and happy for him.
Well, Coach, and to be there, to witness it when doctors basically said they never thought he could be there based on the situation that he is and where he is health-wise, it's just remarkable. And to hear your players one after another talk about Tyler after the game and the meaning there, I mean, that's just you feel for him, certainly, what he's going through. But you mentioned the positive quotes and everything that comes out of Tyler's mouth. It's amazing how upbeat he remains, even though the condition and the situation he faces.
Well, you're exactly right, and I think because of the last week, this has become, not only being a team captain for our football team, but really the university and the entire country. And I think he has seen the love from everybody. I think it's helped him continue to battle even longer. And as you guys know, it's amazing how much special bond and love can do. And I think it's helped him in these last days.
Hey, Coach, certainly a wonderful story, wonderful scene on Saturday night. Congratulations on the win, continued success. And hopefully we get you on real again real soon.
Okay, thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it.
That's Purdue Boilermakers football coach Jeff Brohm following their 49-20 victory Ohio State on Saturday night. What a wonderful scene. Everything. And if you don't know anything about Tyler Trent, just hop online, and it's a wonderful story. Greg Doyle in the Indianapolis Star online wrote a great column on him. It's just a wonderful story, and the connection that the 20-year-old Purdue student who's facing stage 4 bone cancer has had with those Purdue Boilermaker players. It's just remarkable. He predicted a win on against Ohio State on Saturday night, and that's exactly what Purdue delivered.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll be able to tweet out that article you just mentioned at Taz and Moose on Twitter. And yeah, it's definitely a tough, tough thing, but the young man definitely is an inspiration for all those athletes at Purdue and for people across the country.
No question. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about the World Series. You got Bogus in for an update. Third and final one this morning for us. And then we've got Nelson Figueroa, SNY MLB Network analyst, will preview the Fall Classic, which Taz predicted correctly before the playoffs begun. Dodgers, Red Sox get going tomorrow night up at Fenway Park. We'll do that next. Taz Booth, CBS Sports Radio.
Hi, this is Rich Ackerman. Listen to Ion College Football Saturday at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific on CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Rolling right along on a Monday morning. Nelson Figueroa, SNY MLB Network, will join Taz and myself here in a few minutes. We'll preview the World Series. Dodgers, Sox get going tomorrow night up at Fenway Park. AB is in the house, third and final time. What's up, Andrew?
Guys, this update is brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs still borderline unstoppable.
Kansas City closing in on 500 yards of offense. Now the snap is fumbled by Mahomes. Comes left, throws inside, caught! Tyreek Hill, the cheetah atones! Touchdown, Kansas City!
Fourth and final touchdown pass from Mahomes. Mitch Holtis called it on Chiefs radio. 551 yards of offense for KC last night for Mahomes. 22 touchdowns now through his first 8 career games, the most in NFL history. His team winning last night 45-10 as the Chiefs' defense finally flexed some muscles as well. Andy Dalton held to 148 yards.
We obviously didn't do enough, and when you play an offense like that on the other side, the game can turn quick, and unfortunately it did.
His Bengals have lost 2 straight to drop to 4-3. None of us are perfect, but Justin Tucker was until yesterday.
Tucker's extra point to tie the game. The kick is up, and it is...
Oh! No good! No good! It drifted wide right.
Jerry Sandusky on Ravens radio. Tucker had never missed a PAT before. He was the only kicker perfect since the NFL moved PATs back in 2015. That miss yesterday with 24 seconds left gave the Saints a 24-23 win in Baltimore. From yesterday's injury report, the Bucs reportedly afraid Pro Bowl linebacker Quan Alexander tore his ACL, and Dolphins wideout Albert Wilson suffered a possibly season-ending hip injury. The NBA handing out punishment for Saturday night's Lakers-Rockets fight, a 4-game suspension for LA's Brandon Ingram, 3 for teammate Rajon Rondo, 2 for Chris Paul. Houston head coach Mike D'Antoni disagrees.
I don't agree anything close to it. It's just not equitable. I understand maybe he gets one, but how does he not, what is he supposed to do? Just stand there and get spit on and then take a punch in the face and then say, well, that's okay. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Paul sat out last night's 115-112 loss at the Clippers. The Nuggets got by the Warriors 198, and the Kings were 131-120 winners in OKC. Russell Westbrook made his season debut after September knee surgery. 32 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists in 35 minutes. Now, just to recap, either Clayton Kershaw or Rich Hill will start game one of the World Series tomorrow night at Fenway. The other then starts on Wednesday. All this because Kershaw closed out game seven in Milwaukee Saturday night. Away from the playoffs, the Reds hired David Bell as their new manager when the Angels went with Brad Ausmus. And how about some soccer boys? Wayne Rooney, two goals in DC United's 3-1 win over NYCFC yesterday.
Yes,
his team was in last place when Rooney arrived in July from England. He has scored 12 times, and yesterday's win clinched them a playoff spot. Back to you.
All right, let's hit the guest line. Let's welcome aboard Nelson Figueroa, SNY MLB Network analyst, and preview the World Series Fall Classic. Gets going tomorrow night. Hey, Nelly, Taz and the Moose, thanks for a couple minutes this morning, bud.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Do well, Nelson. Do well. Let's start. You know, Taz and I were talking about this this matchup, Red Sox-Dodgers, a little bit earlier in the program. What excites you? You know, the ALCS wasn't particularly riveting. NLCS went seven games. Do you think we're set up with these two teams for a really great fall classic?
I think it was going to be the best matchup of all the matchups. It seemed like for the Red Sox, it was inevitable the way that they played all season long. You know, winning 108 games and going through the postseason, kind of seeing like they've been there before, and it was, you know, Cora pressed all the right buttons, had everything working. When it came to the Dodgers, they were in a dogfight, and they prevailed. I think the biggest thing for them was, you know, you had a guy like Clayton Kershaw trying to get that postseason monkey off his back, and I think it's one of those things where we've seen it in recent history. I think going back to the Royals and other teams who they get to the World Series, you know, that one year, and then the next year is the year that they go back and find a way to win it and get over the hump. So the Dodgers were poised to make that deep postseason run, and the biggest key to that was their bullpen. Everybody raved about the Milwaukee Brewers bullpen and how, you know, how good they were, and it was actually the Dodgers bullpen with a combined, you know, 1.3 ERA that really sparkled in the postseason.
Hey, Nelly, so how will I'd love to get your take on this, man. How will the DH and lack of DH impact the series?
Well, that's going to be actually very, very huge. I think, you know, looking at what Alex Cora can do and having him have to play that style, it's going to be a little odd to try and get all those guys in there. You're going to pull out possibly Mookie Betts to play second base, and then yeah. You're going to have J.D. Martinez, who isn't the best defensively, out there, and you're taking out a Gold Glover from the outfield, and it'll make it very interesting. And when you do have to have the pitcher hitting, well, Jackie Bradley Jr., who just came off, you know, winning the MVP, albeit it was with a 185 batting average, he would be the guy probably that loses out of playing time. But I think Cora has enough weapons and enough bench to make it work.
And Nelson, when you look at both teams, obviously the aces of their respective staffs, Kershaw and Sale, and we know Sale will get the ball game one for Boston, still yet to be determined for the Dodgers, it's going to be either Hill or Kershaw. Which ace do you trust more here in the Fall Classic? Sale has had injury concerns coming off the stomach bug. We know Kershaw, the back, he's no longer throwing the ball 94, 95 miles an hour. But which guy do you trust here to deliver for their team here in the World Series?
Again, I think it all comes with the experience, you know, and having failed. You only learn about yourself through failure, and that's how you find success and you revel in success. And I think Clayton Kershaw, I'm pretty sure he's sick and tired of being told how bad of a pitcher he is in the postseason. So I think he's that guy again. Him finishing it out to send the Dodgers there was a very nice tune-up for him to get him back out there. And he's a guy that doesn't need 97 miles an hour to be effective, not just effective, but to dominate. He has all the other stuff. He has also the intangibles. He has that intensity. You know, Chris Sale, it seems like he's running on fumes. You know, he's been that kind of broken down car that's gone into the shop several times here this season, and it's come back a little less shiny each time. So he doesn't seem like, you know, when he has that less than spectacular velocity, that he's able to get away with a lot of pitches. But it's, again, the World Series, and you maybe take it up a notch. I still put the edge with Clayton Kershaw.
So, Nelly, let me ask you, man, biggest challenges as an overview that you feel that the Dodgers pose to the Red Sox and vice versa, you know, for each of these squads, if you could break that down for us, man.
Well, I think, honestly, the big thing in this series is going to be the lack of home runs. You know, these are teams that they didn't live and die by the home run, but again, they could put up home runs in bunches. They have the Dodgers have so many weapons that they can mix in and out. Full lineup changes. I mean, it's almost like a hockey team with the line shifts. You know, they can bring in a whole all righty lineup. They can bring in the all lefty guys off the bench to mix and match. So it's going to be a key for the Red Sox is how well those left handers that they have in the bullpen, which if you count them, are really none, pretty much. They have Eduardo Rodriguez is the only lefty. So that'll be interesting to see when they start, you know, turning it over from the starters and having to switch those guys around, how they match up. That's going to be the biggest key for the Dodgers is having that advantage of being able to switch those guys out. And for the Red Sox, Alex Cora, again, it also works for managers. And having that experience of being in the World Series last year with the Houston Astros, you could see how he used his arsenal of pitchers. He, you know, used some of his starters in relief. He used guys in different situations. And the circle of trust was a lot smaller with the Red Sox. I mean, yes, they cruised through. Again, they won in five. I mean, that you look at, they had 11 pitchers only on their roster, and three of the guys only pitched a combined of two innings. So that tells you that that circle of trust is really centered around those starters being used like on bullpen day. So your game three and four starters will be in the bullpen early on to get some work and maybe give them some length. And it's going to come down to the closers. And when you look at that battle of the closers, Kenley Jansen has far and away been the better closer this postseason. And Craig Kimbrell has been shaky, but he's made an adjustment because, as in baseball, when you're being prepared for and they knew he was tipping his pitches, they could see it in his glove and the way he was holding it, whether a fastball or a breaking ball was coming. And once he made that adjustment, the swings were a lot different.
We're talking to Nelson Figueroa, SNY MLB Network. You know, curious, Nelson, can you pick that up watching a game? I mean, is it easy to pick up? Because we hear tipping pitches. You heard it with, you know, the Yankees with Severino. You mentioned Kimbrel. There's been other instances as well. Is that a difficult thing to pick up, whether or not a guy's tipping a pitch?
A, it's a lost art. And B, and with all this technology, with all the HD cameras, and you have so many different angles, it's actually pretty easy to do, but there's a trust involved. There's a trust involved that hitters have to see it themselves. And again, with the video, you can show them way ahead of time so that they can look at it in, you know, in the film room and say, hey, this is what he does when it's a fastball. This is what he does when it's a breaking ball. And it can't be a 60% of the time type deal. It's got to be something that's definitive to trust it. And when you see a closer who's had unbelievable success his whole career struggle that bad, you wonder exactly what is it. And when you see and somebody points it out, I think there was a guy on the on Twitter called the Pitching Ninja, Rob Friedman. He pointed it out, and what he did was he did freeze frame side by side, and it looks night and day. You're like, how do you not see it? And so from the batter's box, it's different than from the side, from behind, but it's a little thing that you pick up on, and you can tell, and it gets into a pitcher's head a little bit because you could see it affecting Kimbrel. He was all over the place with his mechanics. He was all over the place trying to fool everybody. He moved his hands down to his waistline. All of a sudden, there was no tell, and the results showed.
Figgy, the Red Sox here. And listen, I've not been on, not picked them. I thought the Yankees would beat them. I thought the Astros would beat them. They won 108 games in the regular season. Why do you think that there's always, especially this year's Boston team, and they're have home field advantage here in the World Series. Why do you think the Red Sox have not necessarily gotten the respect that other 108 win teams in the regular season have?
It's been very odd because they're such a complete team. They can do it on so many different fronts. They have tremendous athletes. Jackie Bradley Jr. is a guy that you don't game plan for. He's the 9-hole hitter, and yet he can do a lot of damage with one swing. His defense, their outfield defense was unbelievable across the board. There is no weakness out there. Again, putting J.D. Martinez out there changes that equation. Benintendi is, you know, going to have to face some really good left-handed pitching. And you know, by the numbers, all regular season long, he batted .247 versus lefties. That's as compared to .305 versus righties. But during the postseason, he's done nicely, batting .333 versus lefties and only .207 versus righties. So where you think there are advantages, sometimes there aren't. And a guy like that, he'll be the key. You know, you have other guys like Brock Holt, who, you know, again, Cora, every time he pulled the name out of the hat, it seemed to be the right move.
Yeah.
So he has those weapons to mix and match. I think that's going to be the biggest key, because the Dodgers have those three left-handed starters, and how those lineups change for the Red Sox. It's not a disadvantage because, again, look at all the right-handed bats that they can put in there. Steve Pierce playing at first base doesn't really knock you down very far. He's been a clutch hitter his whole career. So I think that's really the surprising part, that people always kind of look at kind of the Red Sox. Yeah, they did great during the regular season, but can they do it in the postseason? And they haven't just done it. They've done it well.
You know, Figgy, Taz and I were just talking about a little bit earlier. Series got a chance to be a little bit of grit, right? You look at Machado and hustle, lack of hustle, what he did with Aguilar at first base. Certainly Puig with his celebrations. And Cora, and Cora in the dugout, you know, he's a guy you love if he's managing your team. He's also a guy that can also get under the skin a little bit as well. You know, this series got an opportunity with the personalities, have a little grit to it as well.
A little chippy here, maybe.
Oh, that's exactly what you want.
Yeah,
I mean, it wouldn't be the Fall Classic if it wasn't. You know, I don't want guys, you know, it's not golf. I don't want them taking off their caps and shaking hands. What I want is I want to see some of that grit. I want to see some of that flair. And, you know, Major League Baseball has gone in advertising it. Hey, let the boys play. Well, hey, the kids are playing, and they're playing the game well. A guy like Puig is going to be huge in this series as well. Again, Boston has a ton of right-handed pitchers, a ton of right-handed relievers. Puig's opportunities, he's made the most of them. You know, he hasn't gotten to play all that much, but when he has, he's come through in the clutch, and I think that's one of the biggest factors is those guys that you don't game plan for. You look at Turner's, you look at the Bellingers, and you look at all those guys in the middle of the lineup, and it's always a guy like a Kike Hernandez who finds a way in the postseason to do some damage in a situation, and that experience that they can draw upon from last year getting to the World Series. That's going to be huge for the Dodgers. I think Boston's going to pull it out, but I think the Dodgers are going to give them a much better fight than any postseason team has.
All right, so you just answered the question I was going to ask. I was saying, million-dollar question, who's going to win? You just said it. So, okay, I got. So, hey, listen, I got a side note. So I did my little research. So you're from Brooklyn, right?
Correct.
So you went to Lincoln High, you pitched at Lincoln?
Yes, sir.
I went to Lane. I went to Franklin K. Lane.
Ah, very nice.
Yeah, I played football. I'm a little bit older than you. But, yeah, so we both went to Gruffy schools. But anyway, I digress. So,
you guys, two Brooklyn guys.
Yeah. Well, neither of our schools were exactly fun places to be, right, Nelly?
Hey, it shapes who you are.
It does.
Who you become, and look at where we're at now. Huh?
Amen.
That's
amen.
Exactly.
I agree with that. But you know what I mean.
Hell yeah.
And Nelson Figueroa, SNY MLB Network analyst. Hey, Nelly, we appreciate the time this morning. We really do. Enjoy the Fall Classic, all right?
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, man. Take care.
And check him out on Twitter as well.
You work with him a lot on SNY, right?
I do know.
Wow.
Yeah, I do. I don't work with him. Sometimes, at BNNY, I do. He does pre- and post-game with Gary Apple.
He's a very
good guy. You would like him. Very good guy.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe. We used to have a little rivalry with Lincoln High School over there. But I'm a little older.
I think you can let that go. It's been about... I mean, honestly.
It's been 40 years.
It's been 20. What are you? Married with children?
I'm 10 years older than him, but I didn't play baseball. I played the football.
I understand that. Yeah, I think you can let the Lincoln Lane rivalry go.
For the fans in Lincoln, Nebraska, they don't care.
He's in his 40s, you're in your 50s. I think you let that go.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Could you?
I think you might.
Or would that be the first thing you bring up when you meet him?
By the way,
I hated Lincoln growing up.
I hated Lincoln.
Right? Like, what is this?
This guy's crazy.
Well, come back. We got the undercard for you. It's Taz. It's Moose. It's an action-packed Monday morning. CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Oh, yes. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on car insurance. Time right now to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Today's question is from Justin in Los Angeles. When will the Rams lose their first game of the season? We'll get to that in just a second. Don't forget, submit your question by going to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
Well, you know, who says they have to? I understand that this is an old record the Dolphins have. I understand that going undefeated is damn near impossible. I think if anybody can do that, it's potentially these guys. But if you look at their schedule coming up, they week 9 is their toughest task. I mean, they got Green Bay next week.
Yeah, I think week 11, Kansas City at home is the game.
I think maybe week 9 at New Orleans. I think that could be a problem.
Week 9 they could slip up down New Orleans. I think those are the two games. I think they'll beat Green Bay at home. On the road, New Orleans would be the difficult one. Seattle home, Kansas City home, that would be a difficult game for my money, number two. I think they'd win at Detroit, at Chicago. Unless weather comes into play here, Philadelphia, Arizona, or San Francisco.
You know what this means, right?
I'm not betting money with you. No
money, buddy. Come on. No.
Why?
Big gambling Jones. What do you mean? A little Chicago, me and you. A little friendly wager. Well, where did they lose first? They lose at Green Bay? Not Green Bay. They lose in New Orleans? Ooh, or should I say it? Or do you say they lose at home to the Chiefs?
I'll pass.
You pass? I'm shocked.
I'll pass.
Why? G.L. Michaels last night, by the way, with the little line about wagering during the game?
Yeah, he always brings that up.
Dude, he was like, 56.5 is the number a lot of fans are looking at about right now. Dude.
Yeah. Now he could just bring it up. He doesn't have to hide it at all. Now
dude,
he can just
trending
mention it.
Because of this, dude.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Al Michaels with his painted on hair. He's trending. So
yes, exactly.
His hair is. He's gotta wear a winter hat.
No, he's not gonna do that, but it is sprayed on.
56.5 is the number a lot of people are thinking about. That's basically what he said.
So 2 weeks, 9-11 for the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah,
would be the 2 weeks you could possibly lose.
So you're not sticking to Chiefs at home. You think they're gonna? I say they're gonna lose on the road.
I said
New
they
Orleans.
Could lose. I could say they could lose either game.
You gotta
at
pick
New Orleans.
One, bro. You can't just say
no. Asked me when will they lose their first game? Then they could lose week 9.
Justin, I'm gonna give you a firm
answer. If they don't
lose
week 9, then they could lose week 11.
Well, look at this guy. That's like wow. I'm just a little surprised at the Moose. I say week 9. Firm, Justin in L.A., if that is your real name, they will lose. The Saints will beat the Rams. Okay. My Rams. You want to move on, I guess, because you're getting
annoyed. No, you're going to beat your Rams.
That's my team, my Rams. Yeah, I think week 9 on the road in New Orleans.
New Orleans. All right, there you go. So there's your answer, Justin in L.A.
You say maybe both places, or you don't even know. You're on the fence. So.
I don't think they're going to lose.
You think they're going undefeated all the way?
I do.
My team?
I do think the Rams are going to win.
Wow. All the way, dude. Really?
I do.
Wow, look at the Moose. That's a memory lane. Someone around here should mark that show down.
I do think they're
going
to go undefeated.
That's a pretty strong. I hope you're right.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see, though. I mean, it's difficult to go out there and do. You got to push the envelope. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. If I were to venture a guess, I think they'd beat Kansas City at home. I think they probably went on the road in New Orleans.
My other team, the Buffalo Bills, my real team.
Yeah.
I think they're going to the Big Sky Conference.
They might be.
They're going to play. They're going to compete against the college teams.
They might. Yes. Derek Anderson.
They suck. Derek Anderson, please go back to wherever you are.
He's bagging groceries or whatever.
Just go
doing.
Back to the mall with
what
your
didn't
family,
even need to do that. He's a millionaire.
I don't know what that Derek and Peterman, go away.
He was actually on vacation when they called
him. He was.
He was on vacation.
Who goes on vacation besides AB? Who goes on vacation in freaking
September? Where
you're
a multimillionaire former NFL player.
You should go on vacation whenever you want.
Yeah.
He should not be wearing a football
why
helmet
would you
anywhere.
Not?
He should not be playing football in
every,
the NFL.
It's summer all year round.
But he's better than Peterman.
Yeah.
Peterman stinks. One point, he was warming up in the top of the third quarter after halftime. I was panicking.
It didn't matter.
I was up chucking.
I scored 5 points.
My whey protein powder. They stunk.
Let's get to the undercard.
Taz and the Moose present the undercard. The stories from today's rundown that we haven't talked about on the show.
Should correct myself. Game Kansas City and Rams, Mexico City. That game is in. A buddy of mine texted me. I was listening.
Is that the Greek?
No, different another guy? Buddy of mine. Yes, texted me.
Was
said
the Kingsman text
listen.
You?
No, I don't have the Kingsman cell.
I don't have mine either.
But no, he would. So that game's in Mexico City, but it is listed as a home game. But it's in Kansas City.
These games in the frickin'.
That'd be a great scene though. Monday Night Football, Mexico City.
No, sir.
Look, be fantastic.
Look, these games
well, over
should
100,000 people
these
there?
These games, should be exhibition games. They should not count towards the season. I played here in America, and I know a lot of people from outside America, they listen to our podcast and our show. And I love you. The Moose loves you. But this sport, for me, is an American sport. That's it. I'm sorry.
Mike?
All right, what do you make of the Detroit Lions? Winners yesterday versus the Dolphins.
I gave you, what do you mean? We've been down that road. We talked about with London. I gave you your freedom.
Your freedom.
He gave you your opportunity to spit out what you wanted to say.
Mike!
Out.
What are you making the Detroit Lions? Winners yesterday versus the Dolphins. They're 3-3. They have wins versus the Dolphins, Packers, and Pats, but then losses against the Jets, 49ers, and Cowboys.
Taz?
Go ahead.
No.
I'm still stuck on the other conversation. I am. Next!
Go ahead, Mike.
All right, we'll move along from that. The NBA yesterday put some penalties down. Rajon Rondo got 3 games. Chris Paul got 2. And Brandon Ingram, 4 in the fight with the Lakers and Rockets. Two-part question. NBA executive Kiki Vandeweghe said if Ingram connected on his punch, the suspension would have been longer. Dictate how long the suspension is?
I think so.
I think so, too. I agree. And I got to tell you, I don't know about you, Moose. I think they got it right at the NBA the way they did this. The spit by Rondo was like, it's kind of like the Seinfeld thing. It reminds me of that with Hernandez. Remember that? Keith Hernandez?
Yes.
Yeah. And anyway, look, it was a little subtle spit.
The magic loogie.
Yeah, the loogie. And that's why CP3 got pissed. And he was baited into the fight because Rondo wanted to hit him with that left hook. But there was also a really well-placed uppercut, I have to say, by Chris Paul in that fight. If you look closely, there was an uppercut delivered. But, yeah, I think they got it right on this, honestly. I think they got it right.
I think they did get the right, the suspensions. I think it's a bad look for the NBA. Certainly, you like to see a little vitriol in it. You like to see a little hatred, not everyone getting along, loving one another. So,
right.
Adds to it. But, yeah, I think the NBA got it right. Next.
I think so.
Ooh, oh.
Part of you rooting for the Browns to always play in an overtime game now?
It's free, right? Anyway, free game.
It's amazing.
It's unbelievable.
Yesterday they come back and Peppers with the fumble on the punt return where Browns would have an opportunity to win it. Then you get the Bucks kicker who misses a 40-yarder, I believe, at the end of regulation. Right. Was it 40
it
or 40?
It was 40.
It was 40. 40-yarder right. At the end of regulation, then hits a 59-yarder in overtime to win it. Remarkable.
I had the same reaction Baker Mayfield did. My face was like, what? I was sitting there. I'm like, there's no way this guy's making this kick. He just missed a 40-yarder.
I thought differently. I thought after he missed the 40, I thought he would make it in overtime.
You were right.
Because of the way that everyone thought he was never going to make it.
I really didn't think he was.
And then he lined up, and there was, I have to watch it again. There wasn't much of a rush. He was able, stride right into it, 59 yards out. And that would have been good from about 63.
Yeah, he drilled that ball for
62,
sure.
62, 63.
Next.
And
love the timing. We'll get this right.
Finally, for me, Giants, Falcons tonight. Who do you like?
I would take the Falcons in a high-scoring affair, but I would not be surprised. This is not a game I would touch, I would bet. Not be surprised that the Giants come to play offensively against a brutal Falcons defense.
Well, the Falcons are -4 at home. I agree. I think the Falcons win the game. I think they cover also. I'd like to see the Giants get things rolling. It just doesn't seem like it's not happening tonight. I don't think this happened tonight. I think they're going to do the job, as you said.
The Falcons will do the job.
The Giants will do the job. That means they're going to lose.
Oh. Gotcha.
That's wrestling talk.
Okay.
It's reverse.
There you go. All right. Very nice. I would not be surprised if the Giants played well tonight.
Barkley will run amok.
Not be surprised they score some points. We'll see. Not a great Monday night game, obviously.
Nah.
Two teams that are well under .500. Mikey B, great job.
Enjoy it, though.
Pete, fantastic. AB as well. And we appreciate all of our guests. Coach Jeff Brohm, Nelson Figueroa for joining us earlier on the program. Taz, enjoy your Monday.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, everybody, to the team here and everybody else. Thank you.
You got it. We're out. Thanks for listening. Peace.
Bye-bye. See ya.
There's got to be a 10-second runoff here.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours.
and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.